The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
If I can catch and shoot threes and I can attack somebody and get by someone and create for somebody else or myself and play defense, now I just became so much more valuable to the team and I can then play more minutes.
Jeremy Hayes is the founder of Fadeaway Fitness, a company that specializes in skill development workouts for the game of basketball. Jeremy works with all athletes looking to improve speed and agility, strength and conditioning, balance and control, and nutrition. Jeremy played his college basketball at Juniata College, where he scored over 1,200 points and is a school record holder for assists and steals. He was named to the All-Landmark Conference team in 2013 and 2014. After college, he played professionally in Italy, Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. Hey, Hoopheads! This March, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $2,000 off the Dr. Dish All-Star, Rebel, and CT+. And don't forget their Anything Is Possible giveaway, too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details.
Hi, this is Adam Sestaro, boys head varsity basketball coach at Highland High School in Medina, Ohio, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Grab a notebook and pen as you listen to this episode with Jeremy Hayes, pro basketball skills trainer and the founder of Fadeaway Fitness. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are pleased to be joined by Jeremy Hayes from Fadeaway Fitness. Jeremy, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
What's going on, guys? Hey, I definitely appreciate you guys having me on and talking a little bit about my journey and everything that I've kind of done to get here, but more importantly, just how we can kind of grow the game and keep the basketball game moving forward.
We are excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the different things that you've been able to do throughout the course of your basketball life. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me about how you got introduced to the game and what are some of your earliest memories?
Yeah, for sure. Literally, I'm the youngest of three. So like my dad always kind of like coached my brother and sister just as they were kind of growing up into the game. And so I was just kind of the kid that just tagged along and was always in the gym. And I think I just naturally, I'm not going to say fell in love, I'm going to say became obsessed with it at an early age. And I think I just picked up on things really easy, and I was able to dribble and be able to handle the basketball with both hands, especially at a young age. So I think that really, really helped me kind of moving forward into my playing career. But yeah, just at a young age, fell in love with the game, became obsessed with it, and just always enjoyed how I could get better, but also more importantly, just like how I could improve myself to kind of become like the best version of the basketball player I could of my own self. So yeah, it's been fun kind of watching this whole everything grow through my basketball career. And like I said, if I didn't fall in love with it at a young age, I don't think it would have taken me as far as it did to this point. So
when you were younger, what did that obsession look like? So let's say fifth, sixth, seventh grade, what did being obsessed with basketball mean for you? What did that look like?
I don't know if how many kids are going to listen to this, but probably not paying attention in class, just dreaming about basketball. literally anywhere I went, even if I walked to like maybe my grandma's house, maybe 10, 15 minutes away, just taking a basketball, walking, and like, you know, you're playing 1-on-0 against like a fire hydrant that's coming up and like turning into like an Iverson cross. And like, I don't know, I just kind of like, it was, I'm not going to say it was different. And I just think that like, I don't know, I just became obsessed with the game and just like always had a basketball in my hand. And I enjoyed watching it and I enjoyed competing. Even if I missed a shot, I enjoyed the whole process of it all. And I think that was a big, big point for me because, like I said, I know so many kids, especially the kids that I work with today, that like, man, it's either as soon as somebody yells at them or gets on them, it's like they turn and run the other way. And I was just like the complete opposite. I thrived when like, I guess there was a little bit of adversity or like you're playing against, I'm in fourth grade playing against college guys and they're crushing me. But like, I don't know, I just enjoyed kind of the process of it all. But yeah, when I was in grade school, just I think I could always handle the basketball. I think I could finish with either hand. And I think that right then and there set me apart from kids my own age, just because I technically could shoot a left-hand layup with my offhand. And then I started to just be able to shoot a little bit. So like naturally being able to handle the ball, finish it with either hand, be able to shoot it. And then I think just naturally being a little bit more athletic, that just kind of set me apart. And I really started to see some success at a young age. And like, now I'm like, man, I think I could really kind of get into this. And I think I played every sport, I guess you could say, growing up, but as I progressed in my age and grades in school, I just kind of like, I don't know, got out of baseball, got out of soccer, football, all that stuff. And just like, just continued to fall even more and more in love with the game of basketball. And like, it's been, now I'm 30 now and I still feel the same way. So I don't think that'll ever kind of go away from me.
Did you have a formal plan for getting better? When you think about what you do now in terms of training and the time that you put into preparing and making sure that you're ready to teach kids that you're working with how to do the things that they need to do to be successful, compared to when you were a kid, were you putting together a plan or were you more just, I'm just kind of out working on my game and I'm playing, I'm doing this? Was it more formal or informal with you?
It was different because I feel like I'm in that like generation gap between like before smartphones and everything and the internet and like now everybody that has the internet and smartphones. And like, honestly, what people always ask me is like how I kind of got into it. There were no trainers where I'm from whenever I was growing up. But what I always tell people, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but I used to watch a lot of N1 mixtape, Hot Sauce, The Professor, AO, Skip to My Lou, all those guys. And YouTube became a very popular thing at that time. And I think it might have just been like just starting. So I would literally watch N1 mixtape and like, I don't know how I see things. I see it as like a skill development guy. Now I'm like how I break it down from their footwork to their first dribble with their timing of their step to when they pick the ball up. So I could like how I read it is like, hey, a drop to a dribble timing with your pickup, with your strides. And I'm like, I'm seeing that. I don't know. I didn't know all the terminology then, but like I'm seeing that as a kid. And like, I literally remember I would just like write it down on a piece of paper and just like somehow take that outside I had a little hoop on top of my garage in the street, middle of the street. And like, I would just try that stuff. And like, how could I like do it? One, but then how could I like learn to counter off of it and then learn to, hey, how can I get into a shot off of this? And like, I mean, and I was a very, and I'm not saying like lonely kid. I'm not saying that at all. I was always with people, but like, I enjoyed working on my game by myself. And like, I think a lot of kids are missing that for one. They're missing a lot of like the imagination piece. And I think that's a big piece. And I don't even know how you learn that. I have no idea, but like, I had no problem being able to visualize a defender trying to guard me and I'm like trying to get by them and work on the same things I would see based off of the M1 mixtape tour, which is, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it's good or bad, but like it got me to high school, college, some pro stuff. And to now, like, so I think it had some kind of impact on me. But yeah, I would say a loner, and I enjoyed working out by myself. And every once in a while, hey, I'd ask my dad, maybe, hey, can you come out and rebound for me? And like, he was always a guy that always had stuff going on. So like, you know, they come out for, you know, your 5 minutes, and then, all right, we gotta head back inside. Like, I'm like, all right, well, thanks for the 5 minutes, the eight there shots. Like, that's so funny. But I mean, looking back on it, like I don't regret anything. And like, I wish I mean, everything, you know, now, I mean, you could say that easily, but like, I wish I would even put in more time. And I mean, I was always the kid that was always at the park playing pickup. And, I don't know. I just, like I said, I was just obsessed with the game. And like, and I'm not saying my grades ever diminished because of basketball, but at the same time, I was like, I was very, very fortunate to put in a lot of time. And that's the only thing that like, I truly, truly had a crazy passion for. And, like I said, it's been cool. And I know I read a quote or whatever from Kevin Durant, and like, he was saying like 80% of his time spent is by himself. And I'm like, I just don't think kids do that enough, whether that's with a trainer, without a trainer, with a rebounder, with a partner, or just by yourself, literally by yourself. And like, I don't think kids do that enough today, or go play pickup, or like I said, go to the park and just organize some kind of run and get into arguments and not saying fights, but like being competitive and learn how to win. Like, I wish that more and more kids can do that. And I don't know if I'm part of the problem, just because like anytime anybody wants to work out, I have my own facility now. It's like, okay, well, you're going to come inside. Like, right. I'm going to structure it all for you. Like, easy, because that's a business thing. But at the same time, like, man, I think that was the big turning point. I think just for myself, when I was a younger kid, and I think a real big turning point, I'll give my sister a shout out, Jessica Hayes, Jessica McNabb. Now, she just got married not too long ago, but she got her license, and it became like, I guess I was that annoying little brother that always like wanted to tag along. And a spot down here, I'm from West Virginia area, it was always like, yo, just show up and play pickup in the summertime. So like, she would always go down just to basically hang out with all her friends. It was like just like a hangout spot in the summer. But I would tag along. I'd shut up in the car. I'd just not talk. And then I get there, and then I learned how to compete against guys that were my age now. So if I'm 13, 14 playing against guys that are 30, 35, and like, they're in college, they're out of college, they're in the workforce, they're a lot bigger, faster, stronger than me. Like, I think that like helped prepare me for my own journey, because I think I learned how to compete. I learned how to hold my own. I learned how to like play without the ball. I learned how to like become a leader. How can I get a bucket and then like feed off of that momentum? I don't know. I think that, like I said, that was a big turning point for me, I think, just as myself. So I'd be all individual by myself up until now. All of a sudden it's in the evening time, and now I can go play pickup and kind of string it and put it all together now.
You must have stole my script, man.
Well, listen, I apologize. You want me to turn around and start asking you these questions then?
No. You can ask me any questions you want, but like, the things that you just said, that rant that you just went on is a rant that I've gone on. People who listen to the podcast are probably sick of me going on that rant, but I always tell people that when I grew up, similar to what you just described, like, I think for my development as a player, the opportunity to go and play pickup basketball outdoors against guys that were a lot older than me, all different places, all different demographics, that's what made me better. Guys taking me under their wing and kind of showing me the little tricks of the trade and having to be competitive. And I remember being 13, 14 years old and be like, I got to be the first guy to the court so that I can get in that first game where they're not like, hey, we're not picking up this little kid. Right. But hey, he's our 10th guy, so let's let him play. And then I had to stay until the end so that maybe there was one last game that I could get in. Hey, we need one more guy. All right, we're gonna let Mike get in the game. And I think that from a development standpoint, there's just something that's lost in the fact that kids are always playing in a gym with a coach, with mom and dad in the stands, against their own age group. And I just think that there's some piece of it that's lost. And I always say there's a ton of good things about the system that we have today. Kids have way more access to gyms than I ever had.
Right.
So again, if you can work on your game in a gym, it's probably better than working on a asphalt court with pebbles and the rims are bent and all this other stuff.
Right.
But you do learn some of the things that you talked about, how to be resilient, how to be tough, how to stand up for yourself, how to navigate just playing in a game where there isn't a bunch of adult. Well, maybe you're playing against the adults, but there's not somebody else in charge of what's happening. Nobody's going to stand up for you if you don't stand up for yourself. Yeah. And I think that those things are missing. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting that you hit on is talking about the creativity. And I know I did the same thing that you did. I'm out in my driveway and I'm pretending to play against guys in my mind. I'm playing one-on-one and you're trying to outscore them and you're just imagining this defender that you're trying to get by. And I think all those things just – it's a different way. The way we develop players today is different. And I think you can make an argument that in some ways – and I've said this before too on the pod that you go back to, and again, I'm going to be 53 tomorrow. So I played a long time ago, but I go back and I think to my era of high school. So you're looking at late 80s, let's say even in through the 90s, that you look at player number 12, 11, 10, 9 on a high school roster. Like those players, for the most part, weren't tremendously skilled. Every team back in that era had like the 6'2 football kid who did nothing but set screens and rebound.
And now like that kids coming off the screen, like
exactly. Those kids don't exist. I mean, now you look at player number 12 on a high school roster, and if you just put them in a workout by themselves and let them demonstrate their skill, like they're way better handling the ball, they can shoot it. It's just, it's so much better. But I do think the one thing, and I don't know, I'm curious to hear if you kind of agree with this, but one of the things that I think is that the very best players, I still think that there's an IQ piece and a competitiveness that you developed on the playground that I'm not sure that every kid develops under the system that we have today. And again, I know I'm an old guy, I know I'm biased, but I still feel like there's, especially for the best players, I think the system overall is probably better today for everybody, and it's certainly better for girls
than it
ever was. But I still think for the top end player, there's something to be said for going out and playing 4 hours of pickup basketball as opposed to being, you know, stuck in a gym playing AAU basketball all summer. Not to say that AAU basketball isn't great, because it is, but man, there's just something to be said for being out on a hot playground for 4 hours and what that develops in you. It sounds like you've had a similar experience.
Yeah, 100%. And I can kind of touch on that AAU point. And I'm like, I mean, I guess I'm extremely biased just because I'm a skill development guy and I'm not in the AAU scene. But at the same time, if I'm like you said, player number 10, 11, 12, and maybe I get in the game. So this is my thought is like, okay, if I go to an AAU tournament and let's just say it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're there for 3 days, whether you got to drive 3-4 hours, hotels, food, all that, that's a lot of money. But then also it's like, okay, well, let's just say you play 5 games, you shoot 5 shots in each game. I mean, I'm no math whiz, but 5 shots, 5 games, 25 shots in an entire weekend. Like, how much better are you truly going to get if that's the amount of reps you're going to get in over a 3-day period? Like, go rent out or buy a shooting machine. I mean, I know they're not cheap, but at the same time, I'm like, and go shoot 1,000 shots in an hour. And how can I truly develop like my skill set and then take that to the game and how I can apply that. And like I said, you just showed up at the park and you just figured it out. And that, like I said, no one had to set it all up. And like I said, and I'm a bad cause of that because I have access to a gym and I structure everything how I do with, because I run a business and all that. But one thing that I did just implement into my company is literally a 3-on-3, just like play. It's a night thing, but like, one, because I can have access to a gym. Two, I have access to all the kids. Okay. Three, I can make a business decision and make money off of it. That's great. But I structure it where it's, hey, it's three. I only invite 18 kids, 9 on one end, 9 on the other end. It's 3-on-3-on-3, and it's a continual rotate. And it's like one shot, one possession only. Next three on, that three is off. And it's just, I feel like the kids, because it's like, it's structured. Yeah, they understand it, but also it's like, I'm not telling you everything what to do. And it's 3-on-3 versus 5-on-5. And like, I'm a big proponent of 3-on-3 because like, the spacing's better. You get more touches. Everybody can kind of get a look versus like, yo, if you got that one guy that just is, I'm going to jack it every time, 5-on-5, like, yo, I've been there, I've done that, I've been that guy, like, right. It ain't fun for everybody. So I'm like, okay, well, if I can structure this, I can make money off of it. But, like, at the end of the day, like, the kids really will benefit from it the most. Like, I've seen a pretty good response from it, and, like, it's only going to grow just as school lets out. So that's kind of why I really wanted to touch on it now and kind of get it introduced to my clientele, get it introduced to like my community of kids and pool. And like, okay, now as soon as school lets out, now I can really open it to, hey, it's like almost like an everyday like occurrence that, hey, something's going on in the gym and you can figure out how to get better. But like I said, I think there's a piece that, like I said, kids just miss. And like I said, whether it be the basketball IQ, whether it be like the grittiness and the competitiveness inside of them, whether it be like just the like how skilled they truly are. And I feel like there's several different kids. Like you said, you touched on like kid number 12 could possibly be the most skilled kid that you have on the team, on the roster, and like put him in a workout and he's got all the footwork. He's got all the finishes. He's got all the shots. He's got the, how do you step into a shot correctly? Like he can make shots, but yet he doesn't understand the system of how to play or the IQ of how to play or being able to put it together against a live defender. And then I think on the converse end is like, you got like a pure athlete who just knows how to play, knows how to do everything. But if you put him into an individual workout, like their footwork's terrible. Like
yep.
That you just, they're just skilled enough to get by and be way better than everybody else because maybe they're 4 inches taller. They can jump and touch the top of the corner of the backboard. Like, and I think that like, that's where, okay, how can I, in my mind, figure out what does this kid need to complement their game? And if it's one, just a simple, hey, it's your footwork. If you can, like, if you can just have better feet, you can be a significantly better basketball player. And if it's that, if it's something else, hey, you need to literally work on just your offhand. Hey, you need to work on your basketball IQ. Go study film. Like, and that's a big thing that like just kids don't do. And I think, and I'm not knocking kids, I'm not knocking parents, but like I think sometimes people turn a blind eye to the kids' weaknesses. Oh no, my kid is great. My kid's gonna be the next Jordan, next LeBron. I heard it all. And like, so that's a big thing that I like to ask is like every single time that somebody wants a new client reaches out, wants to get in the gym, like one naturally, hey, how did you hear of me? How did you hear of my brand, my company? But then also like, what do you feel like as the parent? What do you feel like is the kid's strengths and weaknesses? Cause I it's always interesting to hear what they say and like, oh, my kid's really good. This is, and I'm like, yo, you came in and the kid can't dribble. Like, No wonder the kid ain't playing. Like, just trying to be real. And like, I think that's a hard pill to swallow sometimes. Cause like, okay, in my mind, one, I'm trying to be as real and as truthful to these people as I can. But two, I'm also running a business. So it turns into like, okay, well, I mean, I'm just going to put this in realistic terms. Your kid sucks. But like, now did I just lose that client? Are they ever going to come back to me? Like, and it's hard to say something to somebody, but like, I feel like if you can tell them and show them what their weaknesses are and how to improve them and how we can put together a plan to work on them, man, the kid will be so receptive to it. The parents will be so much more receptive to it. And like I said, they'll see that I'm actually true. I truly care and actually truly want your child to improve. And like, that's a big piece with me is if I can get the kid to improve a little bit in a short amount of time, then they see that. And then I'm like, okay, so now buy completely in and let's go and let's really crush like your skill development needs so we can put this together and you can score 4 more points a game or play 10 more minutes, to get something. But at the end of the day, your kids have to buy into really what you're doing and start to see a little bit of success off of it.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that. Yeah. When you're first meeting with a person, what I hear you saying, I think this is something that you mentioned, the dilemma, right? That when you tell people the truth, sometimes they don't want to hear the truth. And then because there are, let's face it, a proliferation of trainers out there, if somebody tells you something that you don't want to hear, then those people generally walk and they go find somebody who tells them something that they do want to hear. So I think as a trainer, one of the things that's a challenge is you got to be able to tell people the truth that, hey, your kid stinks, or hey, your kid can't dribble with their left hand, or hey, your kid can't shoot, or whatever it is. And then you also have to be able to then frame it in a way of, okay, this is their weakness. This isn't what they're good at, but here's the plan for how I or we can make those changes and how we can get them better. And so it's, I think, sometimes a thin line to walk on in terms of it's a business versus being completely truthful. It's a matter of, can you say it tactfully, and can you say it in such a way that you're not driving people away, and yet at the same time, you're not telling kids things that aren't true? Because we've all been, I'm sure you've seen it,
yep,
where coaches, you know, trainers are saying, hey, you know, you should be this, or you should be that, when clearly anybody who watches that kid play,
yeah,
knows that that's not necessarily the case. So I think you have to walk that fine line, which is a big piece of it. So my question to you is, when you have somebody come in, so somebody reaches out to you, say, hey, Jeremy, we heard about you, we'd like to come in and work with you. Now you're trying to evaluate that kid. What does your evaluation process look like? What do you do in terms of getting the kid on the floor, watching them play, and then trying to figure out what that first conversation is going to look like of, hey, here's kind of where you're at, and here's what we would need to do if I was to bring you on as a client?
Yeah, 100%. So typically, how I structure things, it's either going to be like a social media direct message, or like an email, or goes through my website. So somehow they're going to reach out to me. Preferably, I don't put out my cell phone number at all, because, like, you know, people are just going to start blowing up your phone. So as soon as I initially get that either first email, first message, like I said, I kind of like just not saying I feel them out. I mean, I'm going to work with you, but like, I want to know more about how you heard of me. I mean, I want to know who referred you to me. I want to know, like I said, how you found me, all this stuff. But then also I'm like, okay, like I said, in your opinion, tell me what you think your son or daughter's strengths are. Tell me what their weaknesses are. One, where they go to school, how much experience they have, what AAU organization they play for, if they do. Like, I kind of want to get a little bit of back end. And then I have a general understanding from the parent's perspective of where their kid is. And I think it's, I would say it's like a 70-30 mix. I would say 70%, I think people actually tell me the truth. I think 30%, I think people out here pleading the fifth a little bit and just kind of like pushing that needle a little bit too much. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, I want you to understand what you're telling me. And then once we get it all set, hey, your workout is, let's just say, this week, Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Here's the address, all that stuff. So once they have that, typically I'm already in the middle of a session. So how it works is they can come park, come inside. Hey, sit here. Once you're ready, you can start shooting around. And they got like 15 minutes. And like, I feel like I'm a very observant person. So like, I'm in the middle of a workout, but like, you know, I can look down on the other end too. So I can see right off the bat, before the workout even started, one, just how they move. One, how they get loosened up. Two, how they shoot. That's a big thing for me. So if they're going to shoot it with proper form, hold their follow through, how their guide hand looks, all that stuff. But also it's in an uncontrolled environment on the other end of the court where, like, I'm watching you, but like, I ain't saying nothing to you. So I just want to see how you actually like prepare for what you're about to get into, meaning a workout or a game or practice, whatever. So then by the time that like I finish that first workout and the next one's that person's ready to come on to me, like, I've already kind of watched you shoot. I've already kind of watched you, like, how you move. So like, I can kind of get a general understanding if you can handle it all right, if you can shoot it all right. And then I kind of go from there. So typically how I structure like my workouts is like, I feel like, one, you got to be able to handle the ball. Two, you got to be able to attack the basket, preferably shoot with either hand on either side of the rim when you're finishing, off of either foot as well. But then also how you step into a shot, catch and shoot, but also how you do a dribble pull up and then get into all your, let's just say, a ball screen or game actions. And then I typically do all, like, if it's an older kid or kid that can shoot threes at the end. Like, so I kind of like, I guess you could say, tier it from ball handling into finishing, into shooting, into game actions, into why you're getting tired, catch and shoot stuff. And I feel like I've had a lot of success with that, but like, at the same time, right then off the bat, within the first 5 minutes, I'm already watching how you handle the ball. So like, if you're struggling with your left hand, that's already going to tell me you're going to struggle to shoot a left hand layup. If you don't, and I like to use the term, like, if you don't be able to, like, if you can't distribute your weight or your weight distribution in your ball handling, like, I say, like, how Kyrie kind of plays, like, how he flows, how he uses the inside of his foot all the time, like, he uses his body throughout the dribbles. Like, if you can do that, I see how you're already going to play. But, like, if you're just, like, do stationary ball handling and you're just stiff, not moving, and just your arms are moving, I'm like, okay, how they move is different. So then it turns into, okay, how can they attack the basket? And then how can they move off the dribble? How can they finish? So right then off the bat, if somebody can't finish with it, like I said, an offhand, I'm going to stop you and I'm going to correct you. And I'm going to tell them, but also I'm going to say it loud enough so now the parent who's watching can understand, hey, listen, I would really love for you to work on your left-hand layup. And literally all I want you to do is just take your last step, drive up with your left hand, finish it off the corner of the square. And I want you to do that 100 times a day because I think that would really improve your offhand. So like I'm saying it in a way that like, yo, you really need to work on your offhand. But also I'm providing a solution to how they can do it. And it's at home. Don't do it when you're with me. We can do 100 things when you're with me. You can only do so much when you're by yourself. Especially if you don't truly understand how to get better. So I think that's a big piece where I'm physically showing them, the kid, the athlete, and the parent, like, a flaw already. But I provided a solution. So like I said, I'm never going to say your kid sucks. I'm never going to say that. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, if you aren't phenomenal at one thing, how can we make you a little bit better at that? And I'm going to provide you with a solution. So I say it and I demonstrate it a certain way, but I feel like it's in a way that like, oh, opens the eyes of the parents. Like, oh, my son or daughter does need to work on this. You know what? They could do 10 minutes of ball handling a day. That's not a problem. We could do that at home. So as we progress, we get into the same thing with shooting and then the footwork and then how you finish your shot. Hey, you know what? I don't really like how you finish your follow through. Like, maybe you should try this one hand or two hand form shooting. And now you can work on how the ball comes off your fingers and how the release is into the follow through, how it's snapping down. Like, I think that like being able to have a corrective eye and see what the kid maybe lacks or isn't phenomenal at, but provide that little solution to how they can improve, I think has been really big. So, like I said, I'll finish out the rest of the workout. All that will be phenomenal. And then now, especially if it's my first interaction really with that client, as I talk to the parent and the child, I kind of just go through like, hey, what did we work on today? And like, I let them answer. I don't want the parents to listen. I don't want to tell them. I want to see what the kid actually comprehended and like, let them tell me. And then I'm like, okay, that's phenomenal. What do you think you need to get better at? You tell me. So then now I can really see where the kid is at because I put you through the entire workout. I showed you what you struggled with. I showed you and provided examples of how you can improve upon at home. Do it outside of me. So then if the kid is understanding and know they can't finish with their left hand, like, man, you know what? I really struggle with my left hand on that part, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, that shows that they have a little bit of a weakness, but also it showed to the parents how hard I'm trying to work and trying to provide, like I said, a solution to their answer. So then it always gets to that point where like, okay, well, typically if it's just one parent that comes, I'm like, out of us three people who are standing here, who wants to get better here? And it's always the same answer every time. The kids always raise their hand. I do. I want to get better. That's why I'm here. I'm like, okay, great. That's phenomenal. But like, who wants you to get good? So myself and the parent want you to be really good. They want you to get better. They want you to push the needle moving forward and actually work on your game. But like the kicker comes into, okay, well, like how can you hold yourself accountable and how can you get better with yourself? Because like, we want you to get good, but I'm not calling you every day and say, hey, little Johnny, did you work on your left hand ball handling? Like, mom or dad shouldn't have to ask you to do it because then that's them wanting it more than you. So I feel like as soon as it gets to that point of the conversation, it's always on the first workout. I pretty much always say it. If the kid, especially if the kid, struggles with a couple of things, because then it opens the eyes to the kid of like, oh, you know what? I if I really want this, I got to put the time and effort into it. It can't always come from mom or dad, and it can't always come from trainer. It can't always come from coach. It can't always come like from an external source. So as soon as I kind of ask that and structure that, it's like, okay, well, if you really want to get good, buddy, you got to put the time in. and I just provided you with three or four things you can do. So I always say, listen, if you come the next time and I feel like you didn't get better on X, Y, and Z, this is our last workout. This is the last time I'm ever going to see you. Now, am I stretching the truth with that? Maybe. But at the same time, I think the kids understand really what I'm talking about. Like, hey, this isn't just a show up and let's have fun. This, we can have as much fun as you want, but you're here to get better. You're here for a specific reason. And I think when I kind of go through that whole spiel, I think the parents kind of see that, like, oh, this person really does want what's best for my kid, really does want to see my son or daughter get better. And I gain a lot of respect, I think, just from the parents, just from how I interact with the kids and how I actually push them and motivate them. But I'm also like, I'm never going to judge. I literally don't care if you make a single shot in an entire workout. If you do everything I ask you and do it hard and try to apply it, you know, that's perfect. That's all I care about, because that's what you're there to do, is to try to learn and get better. I'm not there to, oh, you missed four free throws in a row, get on the baseline and run. No, I don't want that. But at the same time, I'm like, you're here to get better. So I want it to be like a judgment-free environment. And I think that it's come across that way. Or else I don't think I'd be in the position that I'm in now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit on a really good point that, especially when you talk about players who are coming to work with a trainer, especially when you get down to the younger ages, right? There's not oftentimes a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grader who is actively seeking out, hey, I want to go and work with the trainer. There are some, but most of the time that's parent driven. And I think you hit on a really key point, and I know I experienced this with my own kids, that there comes a certain point where you try to encourage them and you're the parent. You're like, hey, you should probably pick up your ball and do some ball handling tonight after dinner, or hey, are we going to go to the gym, or whatever it might be. And at some point it either flips or it doesn't. And when it flips and it becomes driven by the kid, now you're in suddenly a whole different position, because the kid is now invested in it and they're taking the time, like you said, in between workouts with you. Now when that kid's getting in the gym and working on their game and working on the things that you showed them, and they start to understand what they have to do in order to be the type of player that they want to be. And it becomes the kid's journey, the kid's mission, and no longer just the parent's mission. I think that's really where you have something. And obviously I'm guessing, and I know I was when I was doing more training, like, those are the kids that you love to work with, that shows up because they want to be there, not because mom or dad. And that's not to say that the kids don't work hard, but you know what I mean? There's a difference between the kid who's there because, hey, I'm motivated to get better for me, as opposed to, you know, me and dad want us to get better.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's, it's always tough to kind of, like, I guess you could say, figure out who really wants it and who enjoys playing.
For sure.
And I mean, then there is absolutely, to anybody listening to this, like, there is nothing wrong if you just enjoy playing the game of basketball and you enjoy being out there with your friends and you enjoy competing and you want to win in this, but it's not like do or die. But like, and I enjoy it. I 100% enjoy working with those kids. But then I have the kids that just like, oh my God, I love it. Give me more. And I'm like, yeah, 100%. Let's go. So now you can kind of like throw the book at kids. And like, I would imagine this might be one question that you probably will ask at some point, but how I structure a lot of my, I would say, youth workouts into my more experienced workouts, into like your pro workouts and stuff. And like, I feel like as kids, like, man, let them become the best skill, like the most skilled that they can become. Like, I'm not trying to put you in a box. Just because you're 5'10 at the in third grade or fourth grade doesn't mean you have to go play on the block. If you can handle the basketball and if you can pass well and move well, why can't you be able to take somebody off the dribble and ISO once and get to the rim, but then take them down in the block and make a post move and be able to finish with either hand. Like, I feel like, because let's just say, what if that kid just caps out at 5'10", is now 5'10" as a sophomore? Like, now all they know is to be a post. And I'm like, you're 5'10", and you're a sophomore, and if you're probably not going to grow anymore, I don't know how many 5'10", and you can be honest too, how many 5'10 centers are there in college?
Not many.
Exactly.
Not many.
Maybe at JUCO Division VI, like something. But like, yeah, so that's where I feel like my job and my, I guess you could say one of my philosophies is like, I want to make you the most skilled player that you can become. And that's where I think the kids really enjoy it, because like, I'm not trying to put you in a box. And I want you to thrive in any situation that you're in, because like, if I can only catch and shoot threes, I'm only playing in situations that require me to, or our team to make and shoot, catch and shoot threes, which is fine. But if I can catch and shoot threes and I can attack somebody and get by someone and create for somebody else or myself and play defense, like, now I just became so much more valuable to the team, and I can then play more minutes. But now, as like I said, as the roles start getting refined, okay, now I'm not in eighth grade anymore. Now let's just say I'm really good. I'm starting to play varsity as a freshman. Okay, I'm probably not going to play. I mean, there's your select few that may play significant minutes as a freshman. But like, at the same time, you're going to have a role. You gotta make the most out of your opportunities within that role. Okay, then as you continue to grow, your role might change and adapt, and you got to be able to pivot your skill set. But at the same time, you got to be flexible and willing to do that. So that's where I go back to, I want you to become at an early age the most skilled that you can become. I don't want to try to do that when you're a junior in high school. Now you're trying to figure it out and go play in college, and you got a year and some change left, versus you're a fifth grader and you're still young. But then, like I said, as you start to really, really grow and you get into college, and now it's more of a quote unquote business, like, and it's oriented as, hey, if you don't thrive in what you're doing, you're either one, you're going to get benched, two, you're going to lose your job to somebody else, or two or three, you could basically lose your scholarship and just go home. We don't want you anymore. So it gets more and more, I'm going to say stressful, I think, as you grow, but like, I think it's ultimately defined at an early age. And if kids can buy into it and enjoy the process of getting better, and nothing's ever going to be perfect or gravy, but like, enjoy the failures and trying to overcome and face some adversity. But as you start to get older and like, okay, you've been in those situations, now you can thrive in them. Okay, now you let's just say you made it to the NBA. How can you figure out how to play? Okay, I'm Patrick Beverley. I'm going to be the best on-ball defender that I can. Said, I don't care if you scored 38 points a game in high school. I want you to make millions off of playing defense. And I feel like that's more and more of specifically a business. But at the same time, like, Patrick Beverley, like you said, scored 38 points a game in high school. So like, that's two completely different things, but he bought into his role as he got older. Like I said, I think kids, like I said, become the best that you personally can be, but like, also just enjoy having fun and getting better. And I mean, and you know, there's so many pressures like,
yep,
for kids, like, and okay, I'm a trainer. And like you said, I feel like in today's day and age, everybody's a trainer now. Like, everybody's trying to tell you exactly what to do. And what do you listen to? Who do you listen to? Like, That's, I don't know. I just feel like there's so much negative BS that kids got to go through. And there's so many outside pressures that, like, I don't know. It's tough.
The comparisons, like, on social media, right?
Oh,
just,
my,
you
goodness,
hear about this kid posting this highlight and this person that,
for sure,
got this offer and there. And I think about going through that, and, you know, when you were coming up, same thing. It wasn't nearly as prevalent as it is today. And for me, it didn't even exist. And so you think about what that does to kids, where they're seeing all the time people posting, and it's just like regular social media where people are posting the best moments of their lives. And right. you're sitting there going, man, my life's pretty boring compared yeah. to all this stuff I see people doing wherever. Right. And I think kids experience that same thing when it comes to sports and when it comes to basketball specifically. It's just, it's crazy.
100%. And it's just, yeah, it's a social media driven world right now. And like, and I feel for some of the kids who are in that limelight that are like a Mikey Williams, who's been a sensation since he's, let's just say 13, 12, whatever. But like, he's got millions of followers, people who are trying to pull him and steer him in all different directions. Now he can make money off of NIL stuff. Right. Now it's like, who do you listen to on the business side of things? How do you handle your money? Like, but then you're like, okay, and I don't know, whatever Mikey Williams is, a 17-year-old kid. Like, if I was 17, now am I comparing myself and my life to Mikey Williams, who's flying on Puma jets? Like, that's yeah. different. And yeah. like, that's just what's so crazy. I think social media is a absolute blessing, but it can be an absolute curse too. And just like, I don't know, don't always compare yourself to people. Like, run your own race, find your own niche, your own journey, and make the most out of your own life. And I think that's the best thing, because like, whatever you find that is wrong with yourself, somebody might be looking at you and just be like, damn, they got it all figured out. And like, and it, and you could have no idea like what somebody else is going through, but like, somebody could be having the absolute worst day ever, but then they're going to post something on social media just to get some attention or something. And like, and I use social media, it's been great for my brand and my company, but I'm like, man, it's just, I feel like it's becoming harder and harder to find low key, like what's real. And especially as it gets into the sports scene, is like you said, everybody's posting their highlight tape, which is all their best clips, all their best parts of their life, all their best everything. But they're never, I mean, I don't know why you would really ever post your low clips, but of like, oh, here's me bloopers. Missing eight. Yeah, here's me missing 12 shots today. But like, I it's just, it's tough. And I think that's where the comparison stuff comes in. And like, I don't know, you can genuinely be happy and support people, but like, I feel like you gotta just take care of your own life and I said, run your own race. And that's a big piece. And I think kids said, I would love for kids to get off social media, which is great. I don't know if I should say that, because that's majority of probably kids follow me on Instagram and TikTok and all that. But at the same time, I'm just like, man, get out, go experience life and just like have fun. You don't have to sit in a room and just be scrolling all day.
You have to understand to some degree, and you have to have guidance, right? I mean, if you're a 12 or 13 year old kid, and you don't have any guidance for how to use it, whether that's from a parent or a coach or whatever it might be, you can see very easily how it becomes addictive and how it can have serious negative impacts. I mean, even as an adult, there's times where you're sitting there on your phone and you're looking at something, and all of a sudden you're looking at something else, and all of a sudden 30 minutes have gone by, and it's super easy right. to do that. And that's as an adult who knows kind of the dangers of what it is that you're doing, you still sometimes find yourself doing that. And so it's just, yeah, it's a tremendous positive in terms of the things that you can have access to compared to what you might've been able to get access to 15 or 20 years ago from a basketball standpoint. But at the same point, it's overwhelming. And how do you know what the truth is and what the truth isn't? And There's a whole lot of different things that kids need help trying to figure out how to navigate it. And that's, I think, a role that coaches and certainly parents can play in helping their kids and being able to do that. I want to go back to something that you said that I think is super interesting. And I think it's something that when you talk about training and when you just think about player development, it's always something that I'm not sure I always thought about it this way. The first person that really, I think, grabbed my attention with it was Mike Procopio, who used to work for the Mavericks, and now he worked with Kobe. And he said that, you know, when you look at the highest levels of the game, so you get to the NBA and you have maybe one guy per team, and probably really less than that because not every team has one of those guys, but guys that just have the opportunity to do whatever they want. They have the ball in their hands all the time. They can shoot it. They can dribble it. They can pass it. They can rebound. They're the straw that stirs the drink. And he's like, and then there's 415 other guys in the league who just have a role that they have to be good at one or two things, and they have to excel at whatever those one or two things are. And that's kind of what you were talking about a little bit And I think it's kind of interesting when you talk about player development, you think about, okay, here's a fifth grade kid. When you work with a fifth grade kid, what you're trying to do is you're trying to develop that kid's all-around skill set, right? You want him to become a better player. You want him to become a better ball handler. You want him to become a better shooter. You want him to become a better defender. You want him to have better hands. You want him to be quicker. All these different things. You want to be able to incorporate all that because you don't know what they're going to be yet. And yet, at the same time, it's almost counterintuitive. Like you start getting to a high school player and certainly even more a college player. Right. And then you get to a pro guy. It's like, okay, what are the things that you have to do on your team to A, earn minutes, or in the pros to A, you know, to get a contract and then to be able to stay on the floor? And it starts to shrink down the things you have to be really, really good at. If you're a role player in the NBA, like I don't need to know how to run 25 pick and rolls per
right,
game. You know, like
right, right.
I need to be able to spot up and make an open three, and I got to be able to guard multiple positions. And if I can do that, I can make a lot of money in the NBA. I don't have to be able to do all the things that LeBron does. And so it's just interesting. It's almost counterintuitive when you think about it.
And I think that, you touched on 100%. And like you said, having the freedom, like if I'm Jason Tatum from the Celtics, I feel like just give me the ball, everybody get out of the way. Let me kind of just do my thing. But then think if I'm like PJ Tucker, I get paid X amount of millions of dollars to basically play defense for sure, but like stand still, catch and shoot corner threes. And I'm like, if I shoot 37% this year, and then in the off season, you know, you're going to pay me an extra $6 million. If I can get my percent up to like 40, 41%, 42%, like that's what I need to figure out. How can I raise my clients' shooting percentage up 4 or 5%?
Right.
So they can make $6 million more. Like, I think that's pretty crazy in my mind. And I think that like, and I'll be honest, I think that's one area where I think trainers start to get a bad rap, because it's like, especially social media and Instagram is like, everybody just calls them Instagram trainers. So like, what's everybody going to do? Oh, we're going to do 100 ISO moves and do a punch drag, under drag, and do a hezi, and do a misdirection, and do this and this. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Who's doing
that in the game?
There is one person probably in the league right now that's doing that, and that's Kyrie. And there's only one Kyrie in the world. So I feel like, exactly, we got to break down really what we're looking to do and go back to what I said earlier. Like, I want to make kids the most skilled that they can be. I 100% do. And I feel like you can throw a move or two here and there, but also don't forget, it's got to flow within some kind of an offense, flow within some kind of defender coming at you and guarding you. And like, so yeah, you can do a combo move here and there, but I feel like it's got to be, like I said, within some kind of an understanding of the game. And I think that's where I think a lot of trainers get a bad rap. Because I still think basketball training is relatively a newer industry. And like, I mean, we're figuring out different avenues and paths and everything. And like Phil Handy's been around for forever, and Gannon Baker, and like they kind of paved the way, I mean, years and years ago. But I still think that like how training, the terminology takes place, and how the footwork and how we can label and break down everything, I think that's becoming more and more like aware in today's game. I think that's big. But like we're saying, how can I improve my high school player or college player, or if you're able to work with a pro player, how can I help them better themselves in their role? And in doing so, return, can I have more minutes for my kid? How can I make my help my pro make more money? And typically, I've been very fortunate enough to work with a lot of college kids, a lot of girls, a lot of guys, and when it gets to about this point, so as seasons are ending, as kids are coming home for breaks, especially once it gets closer to maybe May, is like, hey, they're coming home for the summer. I'm always a big, hey, I'll talk to your coach if you would like me to, but I'm always like, go into your coach's office, please just ask them, hey, what are like the 3 to 5 things that I could really work on in this offseason that would either put me in a better position to, and score more points, or can what three things could I do to earn more minutes in this? And I'm like, now, one, you were honest and upfront with your coach. Your coach is honest and upfront with you. It showed ownership to wanting to get better. I don't care if it came from me or not. Like, you're the one having the conversation with your coach. But it gets to the point where, like, now I have a little bit of a blueprint of, like, what we can do to improve those things. And now when you go back to school, so I'll use one of my really good clients. His name's Isaiah Warfield. He plays at Liberty University right now. And, like, he went into Liberty and he was playing behind, like, conference player of the year. And now this another guy he's playing behind is, like, a two-time first team all conference, school record breaker, all this stuff. And, like, but he went in, he bought into the system. He wasn't getting a ton of minutes as a freshman at all. But, like, talked to his coach. Hey, we want you to be able to shoot the three a little bit better, and one and two dribble pull-ups and maybe, like, a floater. What do you think we did all summer? It is now you're coming to the gym, and I don't care if you're here for an hour or you're here for 3 hours. We're going to be in quote-unquote, like, hashtag, like, boring work. But, like, we're going to figure out how you can get a couple more minutes here and there next season. So then he goes back as a sophomore, and now he's playing, like, I don't know, 9-10 minutes a game, whatever it is. But he worked on those things. Now, due to graduation, transfers, all this stuff, hey, I literally say, hey, go talk to your coach, have the same kind of meeting. How can you get better? What do you need to really work on? And so he came back the next year, and now he's playing 20, 25 minutes a game. And, like, he bought into the system. He wasn't playing a whole lot, and, like, he understands he's got to get better, got to understand the team development first, but also at the same time, he can get better, like, as an individual. And, like, with that, he didn't just pack up and hit the transfer portal because he wasn't playing.
Right.
Like, loves his situation, loves where he's at, the school, loves the coach, and he was getting a couple minutes, but, like, now he's a sixth man. Like, now he's going to be in such a better position moving into his next year. So I'm like, I'm super excited to get him back. And, like, how can I help you, like, maximize your time? Because now I'm seeing you come in and struggle. Because, you know, when you're a lot of those Division I kids, when they come out of high school, let's just say they're a McDonald's All-American nominee and they've scored 1500 points and they're always first team All-State and all this stuff. And now you're sitting.
Right.
Like, sometimes that's a very tough pill to swallow for people. And especially after COVID hit, it's like, well, as soon as one small thing doesn't go your way, like the NCAA gave you a way out. Okay, great. Hit the transfer portal and you get one free transfer now. Like, or go figure it out and face that adversity and come out better and stronger on the other end. And you not to say you proved people wrong. You basically proved yourself right. This is why I came here. This is why I belong here. And, like, I think that's a big thing. And I'm so happy and proud of Isaiah because, like, he struggled and he fought that adversity and now he's figuring it out and he's seeing some return on that end. And, like, but at the end of the day, like, he's got to be able to catch and shoot, make shots. He's an athletic 6'4" kid. Get to the rim, one and two dribbles, get by somebody, but then use your length and defend. So now there's three things now he can really focus and lock in on. So how can I get better? So now it's the same, as soon as their conference tournament, NCAA tournament, all that stuff's over with, bro, go talk to your coach. What do you need to do? Now let's come in, let's work on those couple things. Now that's a specific instance versus, like, hey, I got a sixth grader who can handle it well, who can kind of get to the basket. We need to work on creating separation, work on your shot. Yeah, I have more flexibility and freedom to kind of, like, play around with those workouts. But also, on the other end of the spectrum, you got those kids that are either making money or playing overseas, playing in the G League, or these college kids that are fighting for playing time. Like, that's a real job. And, yep, like, they have to truly buy in. And, like, if you don't get better at it, okay, we'll go sit until you figure it out. And I think that's a very tough pill to swallow, especially for college kids, because, like, the coaches PO'd at me and upset with me and yelling at me and screaming at me in practice, but yet I really don't know why. And, like, now I just got to figure it out on my own.
Well, there's, like, two things, Jeremy. There's two things, right, that jump out at me from what you said. Is one, let's take it from the player perspective.
Yep.
So players have to be I don't know if the word is confident enough. They have to be secure enough that they can go in and they can ask that question of their coaching staff. Because so often I think players are afraid to hear from somebody else what their weaknesses are or what they're not good at or what they need to work on. So I think that's the first piece. And then the second part of it is, if you're a coach out there or you're a trainer and a kid comes to you and says, hey, what do I need to work on, right? If you're that coach, you have to then be prepared, and you should know, hopefully, if it's a kid that plays on your team or if it's a kid that you've trained or whatever, you should have a pretty good feel for what that kid can and cannot do. And then you have to be willing to tell that kid the truth about what it is that they need to work on. It can't be, oh man, you're doing great, keep it up. Like, you right. know what I mean? Like that can't be the conversation. It has to be, look, this kid came to me and is looking for something, and now I've got to give them some specific things that I want to see them improve on. I think it has to be both ways. And I think there's some hesitation on both sides sometimes to have that honest conversation.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that it gets to the point where, like, and I try to be, as like I said earlier, like, honest and truthful. And I respect the hell out of all the kids that I work with if you meet me halfway. And like, I want you to learn a little bit of ownership and accountability and fight for things. If you truly want to get better, figure out how to get better. Okay. And if it's having, maybe it's a tough conversation with your coach, go have that conversation. And if you're not, and I'm just going to, and I don't know if this is a quote unquote specific term I can use in today's day and age, but if you got to man up a little bit, like, do that. Like, and I feel like that helps kids, and you can earn some respect from your coach just because, like, you truly want to get better and you actually want to succeed. But like, if you don't ever go talk to your coach and you feel like, oh, well, coach is screwing me, this, and like, you ain't ever going to improve. Like, you're just giving yourself an out or an alibi of like how like why I'm not playing. So that basically just gave your coach more of a reason not to play you. So like, if I'm that kid, and like, I was that kid at one point, like, hey, what do you want me to work on this off season? Luckily, like I said, I played in college, had a very successful career and did really well. But like, as a freshman, yeah, I played 30 minutes a game, whatever, but I still wanted to get better. So like, and who knows your game and who's going to play you more than your coach? So like, okay, go talk to them. And like I said, it's not always roses, but like, neither is the real world.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So like, I think that's been my like biggest driving point is like, what are you going to do when you try to go to a job later in life and there is, let's just say, 100 applicants and they're only choosing one and you don't get it? Are you going to go beg and cry to the CEO, or like, do you got to figure it out, pivot, and make the most out of the situation you're in? And I feel like that's the same point you're in with athletics. Okay, if you're not playing, go talk to your coach or whoever it is. And like, instead of just always casting blame, and like, because half the time kids don't even understand where their coaches are coming from just because they are so upset they won't go talk. And they just assume that the coach hates you, or assume that something's magically wrong. I don't know. But like, yeah, you got to get to the point where you got to fight through some tough conversations to possibly come out better in the long run.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe Stacision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
I think you also have to look at the situation and try to figure it out on your team. And I go back to when I was a college player. I came out of high school, and obviously I was a really good player. And I get to high school, or get to college in my freshman year. I played maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes a game, maybe. You know, and I looked around, and I was a kid in high school who was the scorer. You know, I mean, I might have played defense once in a while, but I didn't, you know, that was not where my focus
right,
was.
Let's put right, it
that
right, way. Right.
And you know, I get there as a freshman, and I don't play as much as, you know, I would have liked to. And I looked at our team and who was coming back the next year, and I looked at my coaching staff, and I don't even know if I ever even had a conversation, or if it was more just I kind of looked and said, well, what are my coaches? Who do they play? Like, what kind of players right. that they like? And I kind of tried to figure out, okay, well, next year, what do we have coming back? I'm like, man, we got a lot of scoring coming back, but there's going to be an open spot here. Maybe if I can become a defender,
yeah,
maybe that's going to get me playing time. And so I kind of just shifted my mentality of, like, being a great scorer in high school wasn't going to translate to me being a 20-point scorer in college. But
right.
if I could go ahead and I could be a good offensive player but be the best defender on the team, now suddenly I could figure it out. And I think so many kids, you talked about it with the transfer portal, which has made it even easier, but so many times kids get to a place or whatever and it doesn't work out immediately, and they kind of throw in the towel and they go somewhere else, and they just don't work through it, or they don't look and try to analyze the situation. And I just think that you make some really good points about sometimes you just got to have those kind of difficult conversations. You got to figure it out. You got to talk to your coaching staff. You got to look at the situation, and then you got to go back to work and really work it out and make sure that you give yourself the best opportunity to be successful. And that's not to say that kids don't sometimes, coming out of high school, thinking about just on the college level, that they don't make the wrong decision sometimes when they come out of high school. Right. And, you know, obviously there's good reasons for people to transfer, but when you look at the number of guys in the transfer portal and girls in the transfer
Crazy.
Portal, I mean, it's insane. You can't tell me that every single one of those people made a bad decision coming out of high school. I mean, it's like that we better look at our decision-making process and maybe reevaluate the whole thing.
100%.
So it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that it's on one of my phones, and I saved it not too long ago, but there was a tweet not too long ago and it broke it down per class of, hey, there's X amount of freshmen that went into the transfer portal, and there's X amount of freshmen that are still in the transfer portal, meaning they haven't found a home. And like, it went through freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, redshirt, senior, all this stuff. And it had all the numbers, and like, numbers don't lie. So like, it gets to the point where like, man, who are advising these kids? Like, if you're not in a good situation, but yet you're on a team and you could still be playing, why go put yourself in the transfer portal? Now you already had that discussion with your coach and your athletic director. Now you're in the portal. Let's just say you don't find a home because no one else really wants you, or they want to just recruit their own kids still, and then they want to get somebody who's older. And then, okay, now let's just say you stay with the same team you're currently already on. How does that look in your coach's
right.
mind? They're like,
exactly.
Why should I trust you or play you in my system and everything if you just want to pack up and leave? Like, I think that's tough. And I don't know. I just want to see how things move and shake moving forward, especially with the transfer portal. And there's so many kids in there. And like, I don't know what the official numbers are, but it is staggering.
Yeah, it's way higher in terms of the kids that couldn't find a home. It's way higher than anybody thinks.
Crazy. So, but like I said, in the same time, if you're in a situation where, let's just say you had a couple coaching changes or something wasn't jiving, and you're not in a phenomenal situation, and you have a chance to better your situation or better your life, it's your life, like, go for it. But you run that risk of, like I said, what happens if I don't find a home? What happens if I go somewhere else and I still don't like it? Like, what happens if I go somewhere and I don't play? Then, like, I mean, there's so many question marks. But that's, and I'm not going to say it's the beauty, but it's the beauty in college basketball. It's like, you never know what's going to happen until you're there. Coaches can damn near say whatever they want to say to get you there. But like,
right.
as soon as you're there, like, their main focus, one, is the team, but their also main focus is winning. Because if they don't win, now that they're out of job now. So it's like they got to provide for their family. They got to do what's best for themselves and their family. Like, so I don't know. I think it's a fine line. And then you throw in, especially at more of the upper levels, but like the NIL stuff. And I'm like, man, so who really runs recruiting? Do the coaches run recruiting? Or do maybe like these boosters who are paying these NIL run recruiting? Hey, I'll give that kid $750,000 if you get him here. But now what happens if the coach doesn't play that kid? Does the booster pull the funding to the program? Like, does the kid up and transfer? Like, there's
there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's going to shake out over the next 5 years in terms 100%. Of figuring out what it's going to look like, and both with the portal and with NIL. It'll be very interesting to see how the college basketball landscape, what it looks like 5-6 years from now. I mean, it's already so different from what it was 15 or 20 years ago. And then you go back even further to kind of the heyday of college basketball and, you know, kind of to where we are now. It's just a different, it's a different world. And then you take the whole, like we started off the conversation with the whole U Sports AAU complex and how that feeds into the whole thing. And it's just, it's amazing. I want to go back in time and give you a chance to tell us the origin story of how you got started with Fadeaway. So go back to, you're thinking about getting into the training business, just how you got started and then how you built the business itself.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I always, I think, naturally just kind of trained. I take that back to when I was like in high school, just like a couple like younger kids that I think just kind of like followed in my same journey that were 6-7 years younger than me. But like when I would be at a park or I would be at a wellness center, even just in my driveway or something, like they would just like, yo, come work out with me. And like, we're all working out together. Like, I'm a little bit older, a little bit better, but like now I can kind of like help critique you along the way. So basically like, I'm not a trainer, but like, I'm just helping you as I get better, as I do my workout type of deal. But then, as I got into college, kind of the same thing. I ended up bouncing around. I was in Mexico. I was in Canada. I did some stuff in Italy with Team USA after my junior year of college. And then I was in Ciudad Juarez, like I said, down in Mexico. And I kind of like was moving on. And I got a position in Pittsburgh at a sports complex. And that was the point where I was kind of like waiting for basketball opportunity of like what's next type of deal. But like, I don't know. I was kind of like fizzling out as a player, and not that I wasn't enjoying it. I 100% was, but I'm like, man, I'm like, I got a pretty decent thing going now at the sports complex. And I was just kind of getting out of basketball. So I started to get into almost like the fitness side of things, like sports performance training. And I started teaching some classes. Then I ended up getting into CrossFit pretty heavy. But a guy who I grew up with, like, his kids were a little bit younger than me, but this guy was a big business guy. He started an AAU program in Pittsburgh, and I was living in Pittsburgh at the time. Basically started this AAU program for his kids. And, like I said, I knew the kids from West Virginia where I grew up and everything. And so I jumped on board with this AAU program as literally like, I'm the fourth and fifth grade, like boys coach, like I'm nothing big, like nothing. I literally, this is a very, 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 very part-time thing. But that, and I'm, like I said, I think that kind of got me back into the game without like all the pressures. And like, I never really had, I guess, a bunch of pressure playing, but like, I just never, I don't know. I just enjoyed being around the game now versus like always having to go score 20 or go perform at this park, something. So then I started going on this AAU program, and very quickly, and I was probably, I don't know, 23, 24 at the time. And like, I was already, I think, still pretty skilled and could handle the ball. But I think I speak well. I think I associate myself with people really well and personable. And then that led into now within probably like the first month of me being this like AAU organization, I became the entire director of skill development. So that led into, we would do like a, you would have your team practices on specific days, whatever, but every Wednesday night would be like skills night, basically. So every team would come in for like an hour and a half break. And they would, it would literally just be skills and drills, all that, and then maybe play pickup the last, like, organized pickup the last, like, 15 minutes, whatever. So, like I said, I was very new to the program, but, like, the kids kind of knew me. Parents really didn't know who I was, but the CEO of the program, who I kind of grew up with, he knew all the parents. So, as I'm running this, like, these skill sessions, like, everybody's basically watching me. And the CEO was basically walking around like, oh, this is Jeremy. He does private sessions. And at that point, I really didn't do private sessions, but like, I did, but like, I never, it wasn't a business thing. It was just like, yeah, I'll help you out type of deal. And, I think quickly that started to grow. So like, but also me being at this sports complex, that gave me access to a facility. So now I have a facility. I'm the director of operations at the sports complex, so I kind of run the schedule. So I know when the court's open, when it's not. The CEO is kind of like funneling some kids to me. So now I'm trying to figure out, hey, I can go to your house and do it in a driveway. Hey, I got access to this facility you don't have to pay for, blah, blah, blah. And you know, just as a, I guess I could say, quote unquote, beginner doing this, like, you're just trying to like make it work, I guess. And so I had a full-time position in sports complex. Doing AAU is like a, I guess, a part-time, full-time thing. And then I'm like, hey, I'm doing 3, 4, 5 workouts a week now. And this is great, man. I'm making X amount of dollars side cash. Like, this is phenomenal. Like, I can't get over this. So then that just started to grow a little bit. And then as parents started, like, I think parents would post really on Facebook or on Instagram, then like, oh, had a great workout with Jeremy, and it'd be like just a picture of us, like we worked on ball handling and finishing and shooting. Then like, I think that's your, even though yes, it's social media, but because like, I think the parents were putting it out, was like, that was my word of mouth right then and there. And like, now more and more people were seeing it and reaching out. But like, basically I'm from Wheeling, West Virginia. So from Pittsburgh, it's like 50, 55 minutes, so under an hour. So because they were tagging me in this stuff, now people back in my hometown area are seeing it, like, how can we get my son and daughter involved, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, well, I reached out to my old principal at my grade school, and who I'm very close with still to this day. I talk to her weekly, but she let me have access to the gym outside of the school in church time. So now I'm like, okay, well, I'm living in Pittsburgh and I'm running a little bit of individual sessions in Pittsburgh, but then 55 minutes away back in Wheeling, West Virginia, I have access to a gym, and I'm, my name and business, or not even, it wasn't even a business, just me running basketball things, right, just kind of right. Like got out more and more. And so then I'm like, now I start the whole like, man, I'm traveling from Pittsburgh to Wheeling, Wheeling to Pittsburgh. And like, just like I said earlier, just to make it work. So it got to the point, man, maybe like 25 clients, maybe like, but I was seeing some of them 2-3 times a week. I was seeing others once a week. Like, so it got to the point, like, man, this whole AAU thing and coaching 4th and 5th grade boys is really cutting into this whole training thing now. And then it got to the point where like, man, this is, even the sports complex thing is like becoming more and more of a hassle for me. So I made the executive decision. I got out of the sports complex. So now I'm just strictly AAU, and then I'm strictly training, but like, it's not a business. So then as it continued to grow, I probably am at like 30, 35 clients now, like full-time-ish training wise. So And I had a really good relationship with the CEO, but like, I didn't want to like upset him. And I just like, every time on the phone, I would just be like, man, it's getting harder and harder to come to these AAU things. All this training is really taking off. And like, and I'm not saying I was lying, because it was, but like, I could do both. But like, I really wasn't with the whole AAU thing too much anymore. And so then he finally, he broke the ice. He's like, yeah, I don't even know if AAU would be worth it for you. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for saying that, because I've been wanting to say that for the last like 2 months. So I kind of got out of the AAU thing, and then February 17th, I started Fadeaway Fitness, February 10th, 2017, started Fadeaway Fitness as an actual LLC, and basically hit the ground running there. So then it's like, okay, well, this is my first time I'm like completely on my own. And now I'm like, okay, well, here comes, I just started the social media of at Fadeaway Fit on Instagram, on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. So it could be the same everywhere. I did the website, have the email. So now it's legit across the board. So then I start like, I think really, and if any like beginner trainer listens to this, like, man, I would say the best stuff that I did at the beginning was posting my kids and like successes that they had in workouts with the kids, like pictures with the kids, but like they could then promote it, especially if they're high school kids, to their friends and their following, but then put it on Facebook and the parents share it like crazy. So like that really helped blow my brand up first. So then once I started getting more and more clients, now I'm like finding a harder and harder time to like schedule because I'm just starting to, I'm in workouts all day.
Right.
So as that just naturally grew, which, and I don't know how anybody that on here that's familiar with Wheeling, West Virginia, but it's not significantly a massive area. So I'm one of maybe two trainers around here. So there's not a whole lot of competition, but also I'm the only one that really does anything social media wise, promotion wise, put myself out there. So that really, really helps me, for kids. So now it's like everybody is seeing it. Everybody is kind of like wanting to join on. So I'm gonna be real. At one point I was getting like 40 to 50 new clientele reaching out to me a day, which was overwhelming, extremely overwhelming. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I really see the future with this. And I think it could absolutely just get massive. It's just now figuring out how to do it. So then I figured it out a little bit along the way by myself. And I slowly just started doing more and more, but I was traveling. And like, it got to the point where like, I got this facility that I'm currently in now. And like, I would start in Pittsburgh. I would drive to Wheeling, West Virginia. Then I would go to my facility I'm at now in St. Clairsville, Ohio. So 20 minutes from Wheeling, go back to Wheeling, go back to Pittsburgh, stay the night in Pittsburgh. And I'm like, I was in three states just to do like 14 workouts.
Right.
But at the same time, if I don't do the grind phase, then no chance I'm at any point where I'm at now. And, but that really helped me grow because now me being in three states gave me access to the three states market. So especially with the clientele, as it's starting to really grow, my next biggest thing that I really, really needed was my social media to really go. So it started a little bit, especially Instagram, but it wasn't nothing crazy. And then COVID hit. So COVID hit, and I'm going to go back to probably one of your last guests you had on here. His name's Shane Hennon at Hennon Workouts. So at that time, I literally just posted a video on Twitter of like me doing a dribbling routine. That's it. No time, no nothing. Like, and I'm like, oh, this would be a good way for like my clients, just my clients, to like, you know, maybe work on their game at home since they can't come in the gym with me, everything's shut down. So then I did another one the next day and like it did okay, nothing crazy number wise. The third one I did, I did it pretty hard, like full speed on my end, and I just timed it. Nothing, I didn't ask anybody to do anything else, and it went really well, especially on Twitter. So I'm like, I'm not an idiot. I think I would do anybody what anybody would do. Like, I did it the next day, I timed it, and I called it the Beat the Trainer Challenge. So then I literally just posted a video of me doing a dribbling routine. I timed it. Hey, it took me 17.8 seconds to do this drill. Who can beat me? Post your video, tag at Fadeaway Fit on Twitter, blah, 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 blah. And it went ridiculous. So then, especially Pittsburgh, there were so many AAU programs in Pittsburgh that were following my Twitter account. Thank God a couple of them took that video and sent it to their kids. So then now I'm getting all these videos. I'm just tagged in. I'm like, what is this? And then it got to the point where like more and more people were seeing it. So I was just doing it every day, one video a day. But I'm like, I'm not an idiot. I'm going to retweet these, share these, comment like crazy. And I think that now all of a sudden took my social media following to a place that like I never had access to before. And I'm like, this is crazy. So I ultimately at the end of the day, I ended up doing 100 straight videos of the Beat the Trainer challenge. And when it got to that point, things were starting to like open back up, like COVID wise. So then I could really just get back into my in-person workouts, and I didn't have as much time to do these videos anymore. But when it all said and done, I was in all 50 states. People were sending videos in, and in 42 different countries, people were sending their dribbling videos. Crazy. And it really, really started to take off. So then that was at the point where I'm starting to post more and more on TikTok. And then Instagram really like followed TikTok's lead with Instagram Reels. So after COVID opened, I would say that was my biggest point in my business at that point. So, I mean, I'm crushing in person now, and I don't know if I'm happy to say it, but I was doing like 18 to 20 hours each day of in-person stuff, which is...
That is crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous. But I'm like, I see the potential for this, and I'm like, I'm nuts. So, like, let's just go. And so then I literally would post my TikTok video or whatever, some breakdown I was doing. But then when Instagram came out with Instagram Reels, that completely changed, I think, the social media thing for me. So I literally just posted the same video to Instagram, but like because you could add hashtags and add sounds, and I already knew how to do that because of TikTok, now it gave me access to more and more people. And like now here came some of the followers, and like now it's like, whoa, I'm getting 800 followers a day. This is crazy. So now I'm like, there was days in the summertime of last year, 2022 summer, especially like June-ish, I was getting, I don't know, 2,000 followers a day, which is off of videos. And I'm like, it was it was ridiculous. And I felt like I was losing, like, I would open my Instagram and like notifications I would miss just because it was just like there was an influx of it all. And like that was a big turning point because I'm like, okay, well, I'm already doing so much in person. So the next thing is like, oh, how can I do more and more events? But I need to have access to more and more people. So when the social media thing came, now I'm like, I'm already doing my local camps that I'm putting on by myself. Now all I got to do now basically is like, hey, post like a mixtape maybe from a camp that I did, and just be like, where should I come next? What state? What country? What city? Where should we come next? And then people now, because you have a following, people reach out to you. Oh, come to California, come to Utah, come to this. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I'm down. Let's make it happen now. And that's been big for me now. So I think. And like I said, Shane Henn and I talk about this literally every day. I said, talk to you about it on the phone. I was like, out of probably everybody in the entire world, Shane and I are becoming like best friends just from the basketball space. And like, yeah, I'm very happy for everything that he's doing. But like, we talk about how can we grow? How can we get bigger? How can we expand our brand even more on a daily basis? And it's cool just to like hear from somebody else who's in the same path that I'm doing. And it's not competition driven, because we're both homies, but like we genuinely want each other to succeed. So that's where it's really, really cool to watch it grow. But like, I'm trying to change, I guess, the mentality of my business to like camps and event driven. So the last 2 years, especially last year, March 2022 until the end of the year, I was in 28 different states, camps, clinics, showcases, even people to fly me out for an individual workout, which is crazy. But it's been cool to really watch that grow, because I'm like, now I'm kind of really truly finding my passion of helping as many people as I can, but also I really like to travel and I like to see different parts of the country and the world. And like, I think that's the direction that I really want to take things. So like I said, as it continues to grow, how can I impact as many people as possible? So that's been fun. And so
that's cool.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun watching it grow. Like I said, from going to a kid's house in their driveway, like working out a kid when I had like four clients in 2017 to like,
yep.
Now I was in 28 different states. And this year, like I said, it's only March. And I think I have close to like 56 events already booked. And like, there's so many states that I haven't even been to yet that are on this year's map. So yeah, I'm really excited for that. But then like, just because of like the social media stuff and like the amount that I've been able to get out and do, it gave me access to other events. So, last July I was able to participate / like I really helped run this event, as one of like the main influencers, I guess. So, it's called the 3-point open. So think of like a dunk contest. So you can get into it, you can compete in it. And if you win, you win money, which is cool. But if you can't dunk, you can't get into a dunk contest. But this thing called the 3-point open is basically a high stakes shooting competition that anybody can get into for big money at the end. So it cost a grand last year. It cost a grand to get into it. And if you won, you won $100,000. So this company hit me up, shout out my guy, Jordan Wortman, who's the CEO of the 3-point open, who took a chance on me and really like enjoyed what I did on social media and everything. And so he reached out to me and, hey, we'd love for you to be a part of this. And how can you help us grow this? And, so as soon as he said, yeah, we're shooting for $100,000, like, I mean, I just thought it was a scam. which pretty much that was like everybody's main concern. So then I got on the phone with him and like, I saw the vision for it all and like what he wanted to do with it all. And I'm like, man, this sounds sick. So basically, long story short, they wanted me to just shoot video and create content about the event and like kind of drive people to either sign up or just spread awareness about the event. And I was able to participate in the event then. So I created, one of the first videos I did for the 3-point open. Think about like the NBA All-Star 3-point competition, 5 racks. There's a money ball at the end. Well, there's one rack that is a money ball rack. So that was the design of the 3-point open. So there you get to shoot 2 rounds. So let's just say you make X amount of shots in round 1, X amount of shots in round 2. You take those 2 scores and combine them for your total score. That would be day 1. So then I think last year there was over 110 applicants that came to this event that shot. So then, and I love the model of it. So if you, let's just say you didn't shoot very well and you did not make the top 64 shooters, you're done. Go home. Sorry. Appreciate it. But if you were in the top 64 scores, throughout day 1, you moved on to day 2. So now you needed to shoot well and take that score. And then that puts you into like an NCAA tournament style bracket. So like the top 4 scores were basically like your 1 seeds in each region. So then it ranked you 1 through 16. And now there's an actual bracket to compete against. So on day 2, it was like competition style. So your 1 seed shot against your 16 seed. So typically if you're a 1 seed, you're a really, really good shooter. And if you're a 16, like you got to come up with an upset, which there were several of them. So instead of trying to compete to have the best score in that whole round, you just had to beat the guy you were shooting against to move on. So that went round of 64, round of 32, Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final 4, and then the last 2 for the championship. So it was really, really cool, and I was excited because I had a really big hand in it. But going back to those social media videos, the very first video that I did, I basically said, hey, who do you think you can beat me in a shooting competition for $100,000? So when I did that, I turned and grabbed the ball from the racks and Shad made a couple. And then I talked about the event. Shad made a couple more. And like, it was a really good video. I think it was put together really well, but it went crazy viral, especially on Instagram. But I get a message like 4 days after I post it from a lady that works at Fox and Friends, live on the morning show in Times Square, all that. So a guy by the name of Pete Hegseth, who is one of the main news anchors on Fox and Friends, was randomly scrolling through Instagram and my video popped up. So they reached out to me and they wanted to bring me on the air. And I got to compete against Pete Hegseth in a shooting competition live on the morning show on Fox and Friends. So I'm like, yeah, that's sick. That's like, literally, I'm crushing the in-person stuff. I'm doing these event, small events and everything now. I'm traveling some. I'm getting the social media following. But like, this gives me major credibility. And so it was my birthday, June 25th, and the next day I was supposed to be on Fox and Friends. So I'm sitting at a camp with a guy named DJ Sackman, running a hoop group event in like the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. And I'm telling them all about it. They're all excited for me and everything. But like, then all of a sudden I get a text message from the vice president of Fox and Friends. Hey, Jeremy, I really hate to do this. And I like didn't even want to read the rest of the message because I knew the direction it was going to go. My birthday was the same day that the Roe versus Wade verdict came out. And like, one's a little bit more breaking news than a 3-point competition. So I got bumped. So now I'm like, shoot. Okay, this is 7 days before this actual 3-point open event takes place. How can I get back on the show? How can I figure it out how to get on the show? So like, I did the event, everything went great for the 3-point open. And I'm trying to like message his assistant, like, hey, how can we set this up? Blah, blah, blah. So somehow we ended up getting it set up for July 23rd, which was technically after the event, but like I needed to do it more so for the talk about the event, but more so for myself and my brand. And, so I got there and July 23rd came early in the morning and, said me and him, we did a Q&A with a couple of the anchors live on the air. They brought in a specific court and a hoop to put on the outside sidewalk outside of Times Square. So like that was a pretty crazy feeling, but then, and there's people lining up watching now. And, so it was great because we got to talk about like who I am, what I do, what my business is, how the event was, how it was structured. And then me and him, Pete and I were going to compete in a live shooting competition. So it was going to be best of 10 shots. So I shoot, then he shoots. So I'm like, okay, great. I'm a basketball guy. Like I should win this. And like the last like couple weeks leading up to that, Pete and I actually had $1,000 bet on it live on the air. Like whoever wins gets a grand. Like, so then a couple days before the event, they actually wanted to lower it down to 500. So I was like, yeah, whatever. Cool. So me and Pete and I had a $500 bet on a 3-point shooting competition live in Times Square. And Pete Hegseth actually played at Princeton. And I asked him about it. He said he didn't really play a whole lot, but like, yo, that's still a Division I team. Like you still got to be pretty good to be on the team, to play there, all that. So we start shooting and literally and I went first. So I made my first one. He made his first one. I made my second one. He made his second one. I missed my third shot. So now I'm 2 for 3. Pete made his first 8 shots. So he's
keeping the pressure on you.
Yeah. He's 8 for 8. So then I made 4, I made 5, I made 6, I made 7, I made 8. So right now I'm 7 for 8. He's 8 for 8. And as soon as it gets to shot 9, I made shot 9. He like rimmed out shot 9. So now we both have one ball left and he like turns and starts talking to the camera saying how he's going to beat me, this. And so we're tied. So I ended up shooting. I thought it was a little bit short and it just squeaked over the front of the rim, went in and his shot and it like rolled around the rim and bounced out. So I'm like, man, you couldn't have scripted this like literally any better for myself. So then I won the shooting competition on Fox and Friends Live in the Morning Show.
Nice.
And took his money and ran. And so that was a big turning point for me too, because now all of a sudden it's like I said, I can't tell you how many people just like social media messaged or emailed or just like even just to talk about the that show and the experience. And literally from start to finish, like I could send you the news clip and it's maybe 3 minutes long, which like felt like an extremely long time when we were doing it. But like looking back, I'm like, man, we did an interview, Q&A, this is this.